folks, it's spoiler in time. This is the show where we take all that hard work we do on our other show, Cord Killers, which tells you how to watch. And we watch stuff and we get to talk about it. Now, this week, unfortunately, my co-host Brian Brushwood, well, not unfortunately, my co-host Brian Brushwood is having a great time out chasing the eclipse. But Bryce Castillo, our producer, is here.
Hello.
Brian Pushbroom, our fill-in from Brian Brushwood.
We have to fill the cameras don't work if we don't have someone in the seat. So we've got to stand in here.
And so we are going to still spoil Game of Thrones, Season 7, Episode 6, Rick and Morty, Episode 5 of Season 3. We will be skipping Firefly because Firefly is not on a schedule. That's just Brian and I rewatching it. So we'll save that for next week when Brian is back. And then you haven't watched Preacher, so we'll double up on Preacher
right
next week.
Yeah, sounds good. You want to just hop right into Rick, or you just want to hop right into...
Well, no, we got to talk about the movie draft, Bryce. Just because I'm winning doesn't mean we skip the movie draft. Oh. Brian talked about the movie draft every week when he was winning.
Okay, hold on. Let me give you the bumper.
Thanks. A lot of tension in the movie draft, Bryce. Will DTS make it over 800 million?
That is an interesting thing of where everybody will end up, right? Because there's 2 weeks left, I think.
September 1st is the season end date. So yeah, we've got over 11 days,
week,
right?
A week and a half or so.
Yeah.
But you've got Atomic Blonde, which is a pretty recent movie, right? So that could probably bring in some bucks.
That could push me over the 800 million. It's still bringing in. It's at 47 million. Mm-hmm. Big and Tall is creeping up on Night Attack. For second place, I don't think they can do it.
No, they're short by, what was that, 14 million? I don't think they're going to get that.
They'd have to get a million, more than a million a day. And at this point, War for Planet of the Apes and Spider-Man, even as big as their numbers are, they're not bringing in more than a million a day. So,
well, especially because they'll have to beat out Girls Trip, which is newer.
And Girls Trip keeps defraying that. You're right. I hadn't even considered that part of it. Girls Trip is the surprise hit of the summer.
That's right. Number one.
$4 million. Night Attack spent $7 on it.
That's amazing. I mean, I read an article that it shouldn't be a surprise that Girls Trip is doing really well because it's a movie catering to demographics that are under catered to this year.
And yet, we have had other movies like, Rough Night.
Oh, God, that's right.
Ported to cater to the same audience and made $22 million. So
sure.
Some of it isn't just who the movie is made for, but the fact that it is, in fact, a decent movie.
Oh, the Chat Realm League is still burning up because I think last week when we talked about it, or maybe it was the week before, we only had one winner.
It was the week before.
It was A. Hester who was in the lead, but now A. Hester's in fourth. And Ballerina Bess and Roy D77 are sharing first place. They're just beating out the third ranked person by, 7 million.
I think they opened up their lead a little since last week.
Yeah. It must be Atomic Blonde, right?
Girls Trip and Atomic Blonde.
Well, but Jetarama, and A. Hester, who are both behind them, both have Girls Trip.
Oh, well, there you go. It's Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
And that's doing it. So
that's great.
You're really smart for picking Atomic Blonde. Everybody who picked Atomic Blonde in the draft, super smart.
Yeah. You want to talk about Rick and Morty?
Yeah, let's talk about Rick and Morty. This episode was a very typical Rick and Morty episode in its structure, in the sort of like, we're going to be self-referential about the plot from the beginning, but then we're going to have some real moments along the way, and then some surprise things that turn out to be exactly what we said wouldn't happen, and it's all fun and games. It was different, though, because it really was just Rick and
Jerry.
Jerry.
I think this episode did a really good job of making Jerry interesting in a way that he really hasn't been much at all over the series. I think it all really gets summed up in that scene where they're getting onto the ship near the end of the episode, where Rick's been neutralized with the cerebral thing, and Jerry's just gloating. He's just having it, and it's like when Rick makes the proclamation at the before you know when they were stranded in the forest, that Jerry is also a predator, that's Jerry showing his true colors of like, yeah. Okay, you've got a little bit of power and now you are abusing it in the most menial way of, oh, you're not going to get cookies. You're going to get oil flakes. I think that was a really good bit of development on Jerry, especially as Jerry is a character we've seen the least of this season, you know,
and because of the plot, right? Because okay. He's separated from the family, he's just naturally not going to be in there. So this is a way to correct for that. Mm-hmm. I think the B plot rightly was relegated to very little time,
very short,
because it didn't really inform the A plot very much. And in fact, the way it would have informed it would be to have the mom actually prove that she could get by without Rick, which she did, but they didn't show us that.
Right. That was all relegated to like her also becoming giant and inside out and having this nonverbal communique with Summer in the background as Morty's doing these teen things. It's actually, I think that's a pretty, it's weird because it's a pretty weak conclusion to that plot line, but it's also a very small plot line.
Because when Rick got home, I half expected to see Summer and her mom still inside out, palling around, and Rick have to bring them back to normal, but somehow they figured it out.
Right. And I think that's I think that's Morty. I mean, we've definitely seen in season two, but definitely here in season three, that Morty is a totally different person, right? In season two, he was like kind of warmed up to Rick. Like he totally understands, oh, that's Rick. He's doing, you know, his no one is as important as everyone thing. So no one's important. But now, like, Morty's getting really aggressive.
Yeah. He handled the situation with the ex-boyfriend. And he was, like you say, fairly aggressive about keeping that guy around.
Almost like
a little threatening.
A little vindictive just like, torturing this kid and leaving him to his devices.
Yeah. Okay. So everything you're saying is true. Everything we're saying makes for better stories. Sure. My only problem with Rick and Morty this season, and we talked about it a little bit last week, but last week was muddied by my own feelings about making fun of superhero movies. This week did not have that at all.
Oh, did you not think this episode was super funny?
I thought it was funny, but I'm not laughing as much as I used to.
Wow.
And I'm wondering why. And I think it's because when I first started watching Rick and Morty, what was fun about it is there were no rules. They were just going to wander around and surprise me. Mm-hmm. And now, because Justin and Dan are very good storytellers, we're getting very good stories, but it's not as funny. When it's funny, it's still really funny.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, like we've been talking about, is real character development, real character growth. That's just not as funny. And I'm not saying it's even wrong, but at this point in a season three, you kind of have to do it or else you become a parody of yourself,
right?
Which is what they're trying to avoid. And yet it's not as fun.
That's really tough because you're building out, you know, there are only so many characters in Rick and Morty, in the universe in Rick and Morty. There's only a handful despite all these crazy species and stuff. And so they're trying to give us really multifaceted looks at all these. So they're not one dimensional, like you said, but it's still, it is not pure comedy anymore. I mean, season or episode three with Pickle Rick, right? Like the big punchline to Pickle Rick is, you know, a family therapy session and this great great monologue from Susan Sarandon, which is not, and the jokey part of that is the family ignoring it. And I think that's especially what makes all of it a little tough to swallow, is that there's a lot of really good character development and it's all very aggressively brushed off. I'm just like, nah, you know what you're talking about. I got it handled. And it's like, I would love that to bite someone in the ass sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, and it almost did last week. And it almost did with Jerry this week. So they're not ignoring it. I think Pickle Rick was probably the best balanced episode of the season so far because, and what a horribly pretentious thing to say. I think Pickle Rick was a well-balanced episode, but it was fun because we got to see Rick construct an exoskeleton out of dead roaches and mice parts. And so you had that fun, unpredictable science thing along with that character development story.
But they're also very discreet stories, though.
Yeah,
you know,
in
which is
this episode. Mm-hmm. There's no discrete. They're both powerful stories. One is much bigger than the other. You do have the fun, you know, the whirly dirly ride, and you have the fact that Rick isn't really taking Jerry on an adventure. Instead, they're going to this place where you can shoot people and get away with it until the place breaks, and then you have the heartbreaking scene of the kid shooting his sister, which was like such a gut punch.
And it's so short that
that's
the hardest part, is that it happens and then it moves on. That was a really good scene.
If this is season one, I'm even chuckling a little, because like, I don't know, none of this stuff is real. It's plastic people,
right?
But they've worked so hard to make me care about people.
Yeah, and there's a similar thing when they first get to the resort there, right? Where he gets stabbed Rick gets stabbed in the chest with that big spear,
right.
And then he gets the bottle and he attacks the other guy, and you think, okay, this is going to be a big thing. Maybe Rick has like double done one over on Jerry, and they are really doing an adventure, or some wackiness is going to happen organically. And then it's not. It's just, no, it's just, we really took you to a bar, and it's
special space bar.
Right. Where,
yeah.
Which I think, I don't know if that's more break, if that's breaking the rules or being more typical
it's typical in a way, because what Rick and Morty does is subvert your expectations, right? So when they come out and say, we're going on an adventure, you kind of know, okay, it's not going to be an adventure. Then when Rick reveals, we're not really going on an adventure, like, okay, so when's the adventure going to creep back in? Mm-hmm. And then they trick you, like, here it is. Oh, wait, no, it's not. And they keep you guessing, and that's fun. That part of this episode was really fun.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see how this discussion happens next week, because in the previews for this week's episode, it was that very opening scene of Jerry getting dragged out of bed by Rick, saying, it's a Rick and Jerry episode. And now, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the preview for what I can pretty safely assume is going to be the very beginning of the next episode, of Rick pulling Morty out of school for a quick 20-minute adventure that takes 6 weeks or something.
Days. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. We'll kind of see, because the show is kind of laying it out on at our feet on some level of just being very literal.
Yeah. And as we always say, criticisms of Rick and Morty should be taken in the spirit of us loving Rick and Morty, which is still better than largely most other things that exist.
Good. It was really good. I rewatched it. I watched it twice. I watched it. YouTube served me up an illegal upload of it, like, I guess it realized people are watching this one because it's a real upload, so it put it in my recommended, and then I watched it. So
and yet you play one snatch of a song in your live stream and they pull you down, like,
right?
How does this work?
We don't need to get started on YouTube's 24/7 cartoon channels.
Let's talk about Game of Thrones instead. In this episode, we see everything pretty much takes place either in Dragonstone or north of the Wall. And the important stuff all happens north of the Wall, with our Magnificent Seven trying to capture and bring back a white, not actually a White Walker, but a white, W-I-G-H-T. They capture it, but not before they run into the entire Night King's army and have to send a raven to Daenerys to come save their asses with a dragon.
So we were talking earlier about like breaking the stereotypes, breaking the rules and conventions. And I think this episode really, really stuck hard to the nose on like, you know, it looks like it's impossible. It looks like it's impossible. And then
several times it looked impossible.
So many times you can't. Okay. If one of your characters says there are no more extra lives, like, quote, there are no more extra lives, it's not a great idea to give your characters extra lives in incredibly impossible situations. I think that is just not great writing, I don't think.
Well, I can go either way on that. I mean, I 100% see what you're talking about. On the other hand, it's Jon Snow. And and so... Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Have him not be in danger? Like, then it would be like, oh, well, Jon Snow just waltzes through the North and never gets himself in peril. Like, you kind of have to have him in mortal danger. And the one saving grace, let's forget about some of the other examples, which I don't think are as defensible. Jon was dead. He was going to be killed if it weren't for Benjen.
Right.
Benjen just comes and gives him an escape, gives him a horse. And so that's kind of almost a deus ex machina, but it's somebody we've been introduced before. We know he knows Jon is there. We know he would do this for Jon, and he gives his life for Jon. So to me, that one felt like, okay, I'll buy that.
Right. But it's the three that were before it where it's harder to reconcile.
Yeah. You know? Well, especially the one where he falls into the ice cold water
for like, and I don't know how Game of Thrones solves it. I really don't, but it needs to do a better job of establishing time period. Yeah. I don't like, you know, you watch that and you think, okay, so they stayed over the night and then the lake froze up and then Daenerys came, which is kind of a weird thing, but how long were they out? It's just tough. There's no sense of time or distance, and that's really unsettling. And I don't know how you solve it.
They showed him sleep. So here's the thing. Like, I got upset, not upset, but I was like, wait a minute, that raven got there pretty quick.
Very quickly.
And that dragon flew back real quick. But then as I actually rewatched this episode, I realized they're there a long time.
Yeah.
They spend all day on that rock. They sleep through the night. They spend most of the next day. It's conceivable that they were there for more than one day, but they only show one night. So I'm going to assume it's 2 days tops. Mm. That's plausible. It's plausible that a raven could wing its way to Dragonstone. Sure. And the dragon can fly super fast, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's a way to just express better.
Well, that's the thing. I had to rewatch it to be able to figure out, okay, I guess that might work. Whereas my first impression was like, well, that was super fast.
Yeah. And then like, why didn't just everyone go with him? With the red shirt there. Okay. Here's another thing.
That one really bothers me is they send Gendry off to run and send for a raven. And then they go the other way.
Yeah.
Yes, he can run ahead of them to send the raven, but wouldn't they follow him?
Right. There's thousands of these White Walkers following them. They're going to send a party, right? But someone was, talking to me on Twitter last night about, I think his name is Thoros. I couldn't tell you because I don't know who he is. Like,
that's the Red Priest. Yeah, the drunk guy.
I had a really tough time feeling sorry for the deaths of this episode because the Game of Thrones, especially this season, has too many sacred cows, and I think this works into the Jon Snow always getting out in the nick of time. It used to be that everyone was up for grabs in terms of surviving or not. And I think that now we have added in a bunch of characters that I don't know very well and put them on the chopping block. But that tension is just not there compared to if we thought, do you think that either the Stark girls could die by the end of next season? Is it possible? Maybe? I don't know.
I think the only people that are safe till the end are Daenerys and Jon. So yeah, I think Arya could kill Sansa, you know, talking about a subplot. I think that could happen. And I think Jon would never forgive Arya for that, and that would cause a problem. The issue, though, is that you as a viewer are used to that. So the impact of doing that is less because you're like, yeah, that's what they do. So having people survive, I think Tormund, the wildling guy, is an example of that. You think, oh, well, yeah, Tormund's going to die because we like him. So he's going to die. And then he doesn't.
He's got a love interest
and we like him. So he's dead.
Right.
And so they have to not have everybody die in the situation you think. Also, we're so close to the end that big deaths like Ned Stark or Robb Stark don't have enough room to reverberate.
Yeah.
So those deaths will feel cheap too. It kind of works itself into a corner where you're like, well, if they stay alive, I'm a little disappointed because the stakes don't seem as high. But if they die that seems cheap because we're at the end of the story.
Yeah. I will say I really, really did dig the battle scene much better in this episode compared to last week. on the icy lake. I mean, what did you think about when the dragons came in?
Compared to 2 weeks ago or last week?
Was it 2 weeks ago? It was 2 weeks ago.
The loot train.
Yes. I love the loot train. Jamie.
I love that battle.
Really?
Yeah, because I just want to see the dragon come burn some stuff up.
See, I liked the dragon's... For as cheesy and hokey as it kind of was as a Deus Ex Machina, I actually really liked the tension of that environment of, you know, them being stuck out on this lake and then it freezes over and it's all the enemy soldiers coming in from all sides. And then it's just like, well, I don't think they have blood, but it's a bloodbath of the whites and the White Walkers.
The bone bath.
Bone bath. There you go. And I dig that. I really did dig that.
Well, they're two different things, right? Yeah. That is a high stakes, there's no way out situation. The loot train was more about, we've seen Danny sitting around for too long. Let's see your dragons come kick some ass. And they did.
Yes.
So I enjoy them both for different reasons. The other thing about the loot train is they had the scorpion shoot at Drogon and even hit him and just be like, you know, no big deal. It's just a cut. I'll get over it. And you're like, oh, okay, so that's not going to work. And, you know, why did we spend so much time with the scorpion? But good. I'm glad they can't shoot the dragons, only to show that the Night King is like, oh, this is how you do it.
Right.
And boy, did I hate that scene. And Eileen didn't even want to rewatch it when we see Viserion go down. But that, talk about stakes. Talk about killing somebody you don't expect. I know it's not a human character, but that is not something you thought was going to happen. Everybody's been talking about, who are the three dragon riders going to be? Well, one of them's going to be a White Walker, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's, well, and part of me thought, because the dragon went down, that Jon Snow would die and there would still be a mysterious third rider, I guess. But, man, that would be, that's a scene I want to see now, is one of Danny's dragons and one of the Ice Kings. The Ice King riding a turnt dragon.
Yeah. Night King on Viserion, who breathes ice and can stop Drogon and Rhaegal's fire by freezing it.
Winter is coming. If he's got a dragon that breathes. Yeah. Oh my God, that's great.
He can fly right over the wall.
Oh wow, that would be great. That makes me look excited. Okay, I have a theory that, because next episode is the season finale for this technical half season.
For this whatever. Half season, yeah.
Other than the dragon from this episode, I don't think that there have been any major deaths, and I don't put it past them to kill a major or semi-major character.
Yeah.
Who would you put your chips on for, like, someone who's going to be dead next week?
Okay, so I don't want to place too much stuff on previews, because I know some of you don't watch previews, but we know that the team is going to meet with Cersei with the White Walker. Like, you don't even have to see previews to know that that's the plan. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't mean anything. I did not see Daenerys show up in the preview.
Oh.
So I wonder if she doesn't hang out separately.
Yeah.
I also know that they made a big deal about talking to how Cersei would be laying in a trap. What trap are we laying? And Tyrion saying, we're not laying a trap. We're being the better people. And every time this season that Tyrion has said something like that, it either doesn't work or Daenerys doesn't follow it.
Yeah.
And she made a point about saying she doesn't follow what he says. The fact that he told her, like, let's not lay a trap, I feel like Daenerys is going to fly in and attempt to kill Cersei. I don't think she'll succeed because it's too early to loot to take Cersei off the board, but she could kill Jaime.
Oh, man. And then you've got Cersei with just, like, all of the hate in the world.
And nothing to temper it.
Wow. That would be good.
Or another alternative is she accidentally kills one of her own, like Davos or Tyrion or something like that.
I mean, I keep feeling like Tyrion's time is coming up. I mean, Dany explicitly says in this episode that she likes Tyrion because he's not an adventurer. But I look at his track record the past season, and it's been it's been a lot of whiffs. I don't know.
Yeah. The other bad news for Tyrion is Cersei really wants him dead.
Yeah.
And if there's a trap laid, it may not be for Daenerys.
I could see a world where they've got to keep Cersei alive, right? Because there still needs to be this other war happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if you take Cersei off the board, there's no one that we know.
Right.
That we've been introduced to take her place.
And then we spend a season doing The Walking Dead. That's a good point. I think Littlefinger gets it next week. I think Arya and Sansa finally do something reasonable and say, no, Littlefinger kept this note from you, so we're going to kill him together.
Thinking is that this whole Arya-Sansa spat is actually choreographed by Arya on purpose to get back at Littlefinger.
I hope so.
It doesn't feel like that can happen based on you know, the conversations that Arya had with Sansa and Sansa sneaking into her room. But the things that give me hope is, A, Arya is smarter than this. Mm-hmm. She's worldly. She knows how this works. She shouldn't be pulled in by Littlefinger's gambit. And B, Sansa sends Brienne to King's Landing after Littlefinger suggests that Brienne should be the one to protect Sansa from Arya.
Yeah. So you think that's like a seed of doubt that she doesn't trust Brienne?
Yeah, because if she was on board with Peter's Baelish's plan, she wouldn't want to send Brienne to King's Landing. She'd send someone else.
Right. That would be a good turnabout if because they said this whole thing of like, well, Brienne will save you if Arya tries to get you.
Of course, the other side of that is her sending Brienne was exactly why she told Brienne she was sending her, and that gives Arya the opportunity to kill Sansa. So I don't know. Her face. And then Arya starts walking around like Sansa and ruling Winterfell.
Oh. Ooh. I would like to see that. That would be interesting to see.
I kind of don't want Sansa to die anymore. I used to.
Yeah. I mean, she's doing... I think Sansa... Part of me thinks Sansa still has time in her because we have this whole loose thread of her part of the army versus John's part of the army of the North. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that is paid out quite yet, short of like, I think if Littlefinger or if Littlefinger manipulates or just outright kills her, then what happens with all those people? Do they won't follow Littlefinger?
No,
you know,
yeah.
And Arya's not going to let that happen. If she has even a whiff of him being in charge of that.
Yeah. Per Face for Radio in the chat room says, Arya wears Sansa's face, seduces, and kills Littlefinger.
Oh.
You gotta kill Sansa to wear a face, though.
Oh, what if she kills Littlefinger? We started off the season with Arya killing the...
Baldur Frey.
Yes. And I think that would be a good little bit of circular storytelling of... But she doesn't. Well, I don't think Arya has someone on her list in the North. Is Littlefinger on her list?
I don't think he's been on her list. But more she puts together, remember she gave. Here's the other thing that puzzles me. She gave the dagger that Littlefinger gave Bran, and Bran gave Arya. Arya gave to Sansa. That dagger is the proof that Baelish was the one who engineered the plot to kill Bran.
Oh.
So that's the part that gave me a little eyebrow raise of like, wait, why is she giving that knife to Sansa?
Okay, see, I didn't remember that.
Oh. Unless Sansa going to use it against Littlefinger herself.
Yeah.
This is the knife that you wanted to kill our brother with, so now it's going to kill you.
We haven't seen Davos. We didn't see Davos at all this episode.
Well, we saw him briefly because he ran out and got Gendry and called for the Maester. That's it.
Yeah. So. And he had that moment with the Red Witch last week, right? Last week or the week before at Dragonstone. I, 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 I don't have a good sense of like how what he's doing.
Oh, Davos. Oh, he's just helping John now. That's his job. He's not a fighter. He's a smuggler, and he's a good hand of the king. So he's kind of acting. I don't think he's officially the hand for John. I may be wrong about that, but he's certainly acting in that role.
I also said Davos when I mean the bald guy.
Oh, Varys. Yeah. Where did we last see? Well, Varys is going to be in King's Landing for the big white show off. But yeah, where was Varys this week? I guess he's just back at Dragonstone, just hanging out.
I could see him next week in the Cersei meeting becoming a some splash damage for some sort of plan. I could see him getting the boot.
Yeah, because we have been starting to care more about him, finding him more about his background, finding out that he's a good guy on the side of the people.
And he used to work for the Lannisters, right?
Well, yeah, he worked for the Targaryens, and then he worked for the Lannisters, and then now he works for the Targaryens again. So, yeah, they will not be pleased with him.
Yeah, but I'm excited. I'm looking forward. I actually am thinking like the action elements of Game of Thrones are now enticing me more than the political dramas, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's where it needs to be, because as we close towards the end, the final battle has to be against the White Walkers, and stopping them from invading Westeros. And at that point, you can't be worried about political stuff anymore. It's all battles. Even if it's Cersei is coming up on your rear while you're fighting the White Walkers, that's what it's gonna be.
So you think the battle with the White Walkers will happen before the final battle of Dany and Cersei's?
Oh, I think the Battle of the White Walkers is the final battle of Game of Thrones at the end of next season. Probably second to last episode is my guess.
But with no resolution to the...
I don't know where Cersei's battle with Dany fits in. It could happen before. It could happen during. Mm-hmm. It could be a situation where Cersei is pursuing Daenerys while Daenerys and Jon are going to fight the White Walkers. I don't have a clear sense of where that's all going.
Yeah, that's tough because I would love... We've gotten hooked into both of these fronts.
Yeah.
And I want to know, I would feel underserved if we focused on one and didn't get a satisfying signal for where the other one is heading, or without a firmer resolution.
I think you need to finish the war with Cersei and then finish with the Battle of the White Walkers.
Yeah.
But it would raise the stakes if they're both happening simultaneously.
What if a White Walker kills Cersei and then Jaime joins, puts the Lannister resources against the White Walkers and the
I Frost mean, King? It's not crazy.
That's I don't know.
It's a little crazy, but it's not too crazy. And I feel like the final battle is going to have Nymeria and a bunch of direwolves along with Ghost. It's going to have a couple dragons on both sides, at least one dragon on one side, two on the other, maybe. It's going to be everything. Everything you've seen clashing at the wall.
Yeah, just an 8-hour. They're just going to present us an 8-hour battle chopped up into bits.
Yes, exactly. And everyone ends up chopped up into bits. Well, and we haven't even talked, because there wasn't much talk about it in this episode, but we haven't talked about Jon being a secret Targaryen. Bran knows. Sam doesn't know he knows, and that's all got to come to a head, especially now that Aunt Dany has started to put a little crush on her nephew there.
Oh my gosh. So what was the throwaway line from last week from the wife at the Maesters? Was it
Gilly noted that a Maester had annulled Rhaegar's marriage to Elia Martell. That is the woman who was the mother of Rhaegar's two babies that were supposedly killed in King's Landing by Gregor Clegane. And that killing of those babies was the reason that Oberyn Martell had wanted vengeance against Gregor Clegane. But it turns out Rhaegar wasn't even married to Elia anymore. That marriage had been annulled, which would mean those weren't proper heirs. And he was married to someone else. One could assume it's Lyanna Stark, who is Jon Snow's mother.
I see. Okay, so not only does that mean he's not necessarily a child of wedlock, but he is also a proper Stark.
He's a legit. He's a proper Stark through Lyanna and a proper Targaryen through Rhaegar. And if they were married, because now it's possible for Rhaegar to be married because his previous marriage was annulled, he's a legitimate heir and would be actually in line before Daenerys.
Oh, wow. Wait, what? Wow. Okay. That's that's good. That's good.
Because Rhaegar was the heir to the Mad King, and as soon as Rhaegar is killed, it would be his children. But since his children were assumed killed,
it goes to the
It goes to his sibling, which his only surviving sibling was Daenerys. But if Rhaegar's child was alive in Jon Snow, then it goes to Jon Snow.
Oh, I want to see that,
aka Jaehaerys Targaryen or whatever his real name is.
Okay, now I'm back in on the political drama.
There's a little bit of there's a little bit of investiture there, a little bit of drama there. No. And the other weird thing is that he annuls a marriage with Elia Martell from Dorne and then takes Lyanna to Dorne to hide her. Not the first choice if you're worried that your ex is going to be super angry.
Yeah.
So it kind of implies that the Dornish were okay with this.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I know we talked some crap about this episode, but it was a good episode to watch.
Oh, I loved the episode. I mean, the crap we talked about it is the little pieces that you know took a minor moment of my attention away.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it was great. I actually really liked the walk through the snow and Tormund hanging out with the Hound and Gendry getting teased and all of that stuff. Thought it was good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for hanging out with us. We will be back with more Spoiler in Time. We'll be back to Spoiler in Preacher and Firefly when Brian Brushwood returns from the dark side of the moon next week. We'll spoil you then.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.